All right, Jabo Sai, good morning. Let's begin. We have a beautiful blot of Gemara ahead of us today. So today's daf is Kuf Yud Ches 119, and we are picking up on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis 118b, the last two lines. So let's remember again, the Gemara is picking up on the Pasuk in Yoshua, where the Navi told us that Menasha acquired 10 portions. So remember again, we saw already yesterday in the Gemara was trying to figure out what exactly is the breakdown of those portions, the allocation of those portions, so and how do Benos Tzlafchad figure into those portions as well. So Gemara is just continuing with this. Primarily, Rav Papa Abaye, what's the last two lines? Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis 118b. So Rav Papa said to Abaye, so when the Pasuk discusses the 10 different portions, what exactly is included within those portions? So it says the Gemara, Itfalun Kachashib. If you want to say that it includes even Tfal, remember again, means those under the age of 20, that can't be, because Tuvahabu, because it was, remember again, there are many members of the tribe of Menashe who are under the age of 20, and therefore the 10 portions cannot be reflective of them. Ihabu bate avos, and if you want to say it's the primary families, like remember again we discussed this yesterday, the concept of the base av, which represents the primary families of a particular shevet, shisahabu. We've already established that there were 6 bate avos. There were 6 primary families within the shevet of Menashe. Posei tap of kuf yotes. Therefore, says the Gemara, you're right. Liolam bate avos kachashiv. In reality, when the pasuk discusses the 10 different portions given to Menashe, that is a reference to the bate avos. And therefore, the Gemara is coming to teach, or the Pasuk is coming to teach me, that in fact, Benos Tzlafchad went ahead and took a portion of the Bechor. In other words, not only did they take the portion of Tzlafchad, but they took the Pishnayim, they took the double portion that Tzlafchad would have received in the share of Chefer of his father. But let's take a look at the Taf Rashbam. The Olam Bate Avos Kachashav Lo Tfalim Chutzim Lo Slavcha. The Kachashav Dalit Chalokim Shalan Vashmo Inon De Darshin Haikra De Noson Titein De Minei Naflon Dalit Chalokim Aideh Shanu Darshim Vavarta Zuchilek Bechora. Therefore, we'll say the way we understand it is the following. 6 of the Chalokim of Menashe's portion were given to the Bate Avos, the primary families, and 4 more portions ultimately, again, we're given to Tzlafchad. Benos Tzlafchad, the daughters of Tzlafchad. Why do the daughters of Tzlafchad receive 4 portions? Because, again, they received their father, Tzlafchad was a Bechor, was a firstborn to Chefer, and therefore when they inherit their father, they inherit his double portion as well. Alma, we will say, now the Gemara is going to make a statement over here that we are going to expound upon in just a little bit, so we'll read it now and explain it in the Meretz Hashem later. Alma, Eretz Yisrael Muchzakesi. I will say, what we see over here is that Eretz Yisrael was considered to be Muchzak, was considered to be the real property of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, of those who left Egypt. The Rebbe said, what the Gemara is alluding to over here is a topic we're going to come back to, again, in today's daf, which is the following. We've already established that in general, when a Bechor gets Pishnayim, when a Bechor gets double portion, what does he get double portion in? Remember, again, pause that question for just a moment. When a father dies, there are 2 parts to his property. There's what's called the Muchzak. Muchzak means the property that he owns, and there's what's called Ro'i. Ro'i means property that he is entitled to, but lav dafka, that he has possession of it now. The halacha is that a Bechor only gets Pishnayim in what's called the Muchzak, in what the father actually owns, but not in the Ro'i, not in what the father is entitled to, but does that not yet have possession of. So the Gemara is pointing out over here the fact that Benos Tzlafchad got a double portion of based on their father's Bechorah in Chefer's property, tells us that what? Remember again, I will say this is all reflective of the idea that Eretz Yisrael was divided up among Yotzei Mitzrayim. Not only was it divided among Yotzei Mitzrayim, but they're considered to be Muchzak. They were considered ultimately, again, to have actually had possession of Eretz Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim. Again, we're going to leave that for now. We're going to come back to that in just a little bit. Amramar. Va'abanim not lo b'schus avi aviyem, u b'schus avi amosem. So also remember again, the Gemara said, the Braisa that we quoted before said, that the children of the Meraglim, and then the children of the Mislonanim, ultimately, even though again their fathers lost their portion, remember again the Meraglim was inherited by Yoshua and Kalev, the Meslonim that went back to the general pot of Yotzei Mitzrayim and was redivided amongst all the Shatim, but the children of these individuals still had a portion in Eretz Yisrael. How so? Because remember, again, they inherited from someone, whether they inherited from their paternal grandfather or from their maternal grandfather. Vatan, Yabiat the Braisa says, Bischos Atzman. Yet we have a Braisa that says that the children, the sons of the Meraglim and the sons of the Misloninim, received their own portion in Eretz Yisrael. So we have a stira. Because our Braisa, the Braisa that we read a few blat ago, told us that the children of the Meraglim, the sons of the Meraglim, and the sons of the Misloninim, obviously they didn't receive their father's portion. Why? Because their fathers lost their portions. Meraglim's portion was inherited by Oshu and Kalev. Misloninim, again, as I said before, went back to the general pot of Yotzei Mitzrayim. What the Braisa was saying is, just in general, they inherited something. Because Lemaisa, they all had paternal grandfathers or maternal grandfathers whom they inherited from. Yet you have another Braisa that says, then no, they got their own portion in Eretz Yisrael. So which one is it? Lo kasha. So the Gemara says, there's a very easy resolution. The Braisos reflect two different opinions. See, they both say, the Braisa that says that the sons of the Meraglim and the sons of the Misloninim received their own portions, so that Braisa reflects the view, of the opinion who says that Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those who entered into the land of Israel. Therefore, according to that approach, the sons of the Meraglim and the sons of the Misloninim in fact received their own portions in Eretz Yisrael. Masha'inke, in the opinion that says that the sons of the Misloninim got their portion in Eretz Yisrael through inheritance of either maternal or paternal grandfathers, that reflects the view that Eretz Yisrael was divided up amongst those who left Egypt. The Baisema, another possible resolution, Havaha Lebay Haaretz. Both Braisos reflect the view that Eretz Yisrael was divided up amongst those who entered into the land. Aye, but how do we reconcile the contradiction then? Velo kasha, ha de hava ben esrim, ha de lo hava ben esrim. So what's the rest of the very interesting, that what happens, that according to the opinion who says that the sons were 20 years old, so they received their own portion. The opinion that's, look at the Rashbam, ha, it's almost right across in the Rashbam, ha, So the opinion that says that they received their own portion, ultimately again, is a situation where the sons were 20 years old and above when they entered into the land. The opinion that says that they did not receive their own portion is a reference to what? That the children of the Meraglim or the children of the Misloninim were not 20 years old when they entered in. Therefore, if you weren't 20, you did not receive your own portion. So where did their portion ultimately come from? Because they inherited their maternal or paternal grandfathers. Now, boss, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking to yourself, impossible. I see it on your faces. Impossible. Right? What's the problem? Because at the end of the day, it is impossible that the Misloninim or the Meraglim had sons who were under the age of 20 when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. Why, Rav Ozai? Because remember, the Meraglim and the Misloninim happened in year 2 in the sojourn in the desert. There was another 38, 39 years after that. So I'll say any sons they had to be well over the age of 20. Therefore comes along the Rashbam says, don't worry. Look at the Rashbam, Divrei Maaseh D'Lahavu B'nei Esrim, Keshabal La'aretz, U'B'nei HaMisloninim Kamari. It's not the grandsons. That ultimately, again, if they had sons who were above the age of 20, which is a possibility, so they might say they inherited their own portion. But if they didn't have sons, but let's say they had grandsons who were under the age of 20, those grandsons would have had a portion in Eretz Yisrael by dint of the inheritance that they would have received through their maternal grandfather or paternal grandfather. So bottom line, this whole discussion still revolves ultimately around the three-way machlokes, about how Eretz Yisrael was divided up. Was it divided up amongst Yotzei Mitzrayim? Was it divided up amongst Boi Haaretz? Or was it divided up amongst both? Were there two groups ultimately, again, who inherited the land, both the group who came into the land, the group who exited Eretz Yisrael? That's a three-way machlokes. I will say the Gemara does not resolve. This is just a... It's interesting. This is a historical machlokes. Historical machlokes. There seems to have psukim that go ahead and support it different ways. But no slavchad figure into this discussion in a very prominent fashion. Why? Because at the end of the day, remember the laws of inheritance are brought down by Benos Tzlafchad. Benos Tzlafchad are the ones who forced the discussion about inheritance laws while Jewish people were still in the desert. Therefore, again, they're brought into a dominant piece in this conversation. And ultimately, we now see that not only did they receive their father's portion, but they also received the Bechorah of their father as well. Okay, says the Gemara. V'shahaya Bechor notel shnei chalakim. So also remember, again, the Mishnah said that Benos Tzlafchad received three portions. Although according to the Gemara we just read, it was four portions. But the Maaseh will say now, according to the Mishnah, three portions. And one of those portions was the fact that they received a double portion of their father. Remember, Tzlafchad was a Bechor of Chefer, and therefore, again, Tzlafchad gets a double portion. That double portion ultimately is transferred down to Benos Tzlafchad. So I'll say, so now the Gemara has the real discussion that the Gemara alluded to before. Va'amai, va'amai. Roihu. So let's go back and analyze this. So Benos Tzlafchad come along and they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, our father died, there is no sons, we should inherit his portion in Eretz Yisrael. So ultimately again, Moshe Rabbeinu paskins that they are correct, and therefore, bless you, and therefore again, they do receive their father's portion in Eretz Yisrael. Now the Mishnah told me, not only do they receive their father's portion, but Tzlafchad was a firstborn, therefore again, they received the Pishan, the double portion that Tzlafchad would have received from his father Chefer. So we'll say, what Pishtam are we talking about? So presumably, what Pishtam are we talking about? What double portion? Double portion in what? In Eretz Yisrael. So that's the assumption over here. That Lemaisa, what Benos Tzlafchad end up getting, is not only their father's portion in Eretz Yisrael, but they end up getting their father's Pishtam, their father's double portion, in what would have been the inheritance of Chefer in Eretz Yisrael as well. So that's the why. Va'amai, ro'ihu. So let's say we make the assumption that it's the following. When Chefer has an entitlement to Eretz Yisrael, it's just that. It's an entitlement. It's an entitlement. We don't view it as if what? As if Chefer was the actual owner of that portion of Eretz Yisrael, an entitlement to it. Ve'ein ha-bechor notel b'raikim mukhsak. Well, it's a very, very important yisod. As we said before, a Bechor gets a double portion, but only gets a double portion in those things that are owned by the father at the time of his death. Those things that are not owned by the father, but are entitlements to the father at the time of his death, the Bechor inherits, like the rest of the sons, but he doesn't get Pishnaim, he doesn't get a double portion. So the Gemara says the following, I understand if Benos Tzlafchad will inherit their father's portion, but why should they get their father's double portion in the property of Chefer? That property, that Chelek in Eretz Yisrael, is not owned by Chefer, rather what is that? Right. What is that? It's a right. It's an entitlement. And a Bechor does not get Pishnaim in an entitlement, only gets Pishnaim in that which is actually owned. So let's listen to this. So the Amr Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. B'yisedos ohalim. Literally it means in the pegs of the tent. Now what does it mean in the pegs of the tent? Take a look at the Rashbam. It's the last of the short lines of the Rashbam before the lines get really wide. Kilomar. So what it means is, you're right. When we say that Benos Tzlafchad inherited Pishnayim in Chefer's estate, what that's referring to is metaltalin, that there was movable property that was part of the estate of Chefer. The Gemara is just using tent pegs as an example of movable property. So it doesn't mean they got a double portion in Eretz Yisrael. What it meant was that when Chefer died and his sons inherited his movable property, Tzlafchad, had he been alive, would have received a double portion in the movable property, and therefore the daughters of Tzlafchad inherit their father's rights to double portions. Look at that, Rashbam. B'yisedos olim, k'lar b'metaltalin, shahayolem b'midbar, k'gon yisedos shetokin b'hem ohalehen. So referring to movable property, like the pegs that were used to pitch their tents, ushar metaltalin, shein muchzakin b'hem, ulahach inakat yistos olim. Why does the Gemara, Rashbam, why does the Gemara choose the example of tent pegs? Divadei lekulan hayu ohalin, ve'in ada b'midbar below ohal. We'll say this is just an example, because the assumption is what? If there's one thing everybody had, it was tent pegs, because everybody was living in tents. Aval menachlas Eretz Yisrael lo natal chelik bechora. V'chol shlosha chalokin demasnisin bim makakoi bim metalti mayri levad mechelik bechora demayri metalti. So we'll say, Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, you're right, that b'no slavchad do not inherit a pishnayim, a double portion in Eretz Yisrael, because that's called ro'i, not muchsok. What do they get a double portion in? They got a double portion in whatever metaltalin Hefer owned at the time of his death. Had Slavchad been alive, he would have inherited a double portion of metaltalin, and therefore Slavchad get that as well. So says the Gemara, Massiv Rabbi Yehuda, Massiv Rabba, Rabbi raises the kasha. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Benot Slavchad Notlu Dalit Chalokim. Yet Abba said, we learned before that what? That Rabbi Yehuda said that the daughters of Slavchad took four portions. And Abba said, four portions in what? Shenemar Vayiplu Chevle Menasha Asar. Remember, what did we just get finished saying? We just got finished saying that the Pasuk says Menasha took 10 Chalokim in Eretz Yisrael, and four of those were inherited by Benot Slavchad. So Abba said, what do you see? What do you see? That the Pishnaim of Bnos Slavchad is not in Metaltalin. The Pishnaim of Bnos Slavchad was in actual Eretz Yisrael. So we have a kasha. How could Bnos Slavchad be receiving Pishnaim double portion in Eretz Yisrael? When what? When again, Eretz Yisrael is Ra'ui and not Muchsak. Right? Ultimately, again, you only get Pishnaim in that which the father owned at the time of his death. When Hefer died, he has rights in Eretz Yisrael. It's Ra'ui, but he doesn't own the property in Eretz Yisrael. So how could Bnos Slavchad get Pishnaim in that? To which the Gemara says something so beautiful. Amar Rabba, Eretz Yisrael Muchzakesi. And then Rabba say, what do you see? That the Jews' right in Eretz Yisrael is not simply Roi. It's Muchzak. It's Muchzak. Rabba say, such a beautiful Yisod. You see, we often assume that the Jews' right to Eretz Yisrael is only when you come in and sell the land. It's not true. Every Jew has a chilek in Eretz Yisrael. And not only does every Jew have a chilek in Eretz Yisrael, but Rabbi says it's not a roi, it's not an entitlement, it's muchzak. Therefore, again, what happens? When Hefer receives his portion, as Yosei Mitzrayim will say, we're going to say that's not a roi, that's a muchzak. He's considered not just to have an entitlement, he's considered to own. I will say, and here's the amazing part, which is, what's the chiddush? The chiddush over here is, he's considered an owner, even though what? Even though what? We don't know what portion he was going to get. Remember again, the portions that everybody was going to only become known much later on. But you see the intensity of the connection between the Jew and Eretz Yisrael. That even before you get there, and even before you know what you're getting, you own it. And therefore, when Hefer is given a portion of Eretz Yisrael as a member of Yotzi Mitzrayim, he owns that chilek in Eretz Yisrael. Unless you think that this is just like a metaphorical ownership, a spiritual ownership, it's a halachic ownership. What's the raya? The raya to that is when he dies, and ultimately, again, his son Slavchad, who is also dead already, receives a double portion. That's a real pishnayim. It's considered to be muchzak. And therefore, the daughters of Tzlafchad inherit a double portion in Eretz Yisrael from their grandfather through their deceased father. So Rabbi Yosef, the Gemara is teaching us is an incredible chiddush, that not only did the Jews who left Mitzrayim, not only are they the recipients of the portion, but it's not even a roi, it's not just an entitlement, but rather again, it's an actual muchzak. They were considered to be the owners of this land. The portion, particular portion, would become clarified later. But they were considered to be the muchzak in the land right when they left Eretz Yisrael. Incredible. Meisvei, Amrav Chitko, suppose that's in the Zimah raises the kasha. Akasha. What's the kasha? Amar Abichitka. Abichitka raised the following issue. Shimon HaShikmuni, how you be chav mitzvim to Rabbi Akiva. What's actually a very sweet Gemara. Rabbi Chitka says that Shimon HaShikmuni was my friend. How you be chaver mitamidi Rabbi Akiva. He was my friend, and we were both students of Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Vekach hayo Rabbi Shimon HaShikmuni Omer. So we'll say, if you notice it, by the way, if you notice, it's an interesting, the Lashon changes. Remember, Rabbi Chitka says that Shimon HaShikmoni was my friend. Meaning, in our youth, Shimon HaShikmoni was my friend. Of course, Shimon HaShikmoni then becomes Rabbi Shimon HaShikmoni. So Rabbi Shimon HaShikmoni says, Omer, listen to this, we'll say, beautiful Gemara. Yodeya Hayamosh Rabbeinu. Shabnos Tzlavchad Yarshav Sein. Because Moshe Rabbeinu knew that Benos Tzlavchad were going to inherit their father. Remember again, when you read the Pesukim, we're going to discuss this in greater depth. So it sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what the halacha was. Right? Remember again, the daughters of Tzlavchad come before Moshe Rabbeinu. And they say, Avinu meis below ben. They give him the whole narrative. Our father died without any sons. Lama nigora shem Avinu miYisrael. Why should our father's name be lost from amongst Klal Yisrael? And what does the pasuk say? Vayakriv mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu brings their question, brings their issue before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it sounds like that what happened, that Moshe Rabbeinu was faced with a shy that he did not know the answer. Rabbi Shimon HaShikmoni says no. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the halacha. Knew the halacha, that's what? What's the halacha? That if a father dies, he leaves behind no sons, so who inherits the father? His daughters. He knew that. So what was his kasha? Avalo haya yodea imnotlos chelek bechora in lav. We'll say Moshe Rabbeinu's shayla was what? Moshe Rabbeinu's shayla was, he knew that Tzlavchad was a bechor. His shayla was, do the daughters of Tzlavchad inherit their father's double portion or not? In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the daughters of Tzlavchad inherited Tzlavchad. What he did not know was do the daughters of Tzlavchad also inherit their father's double portion in his father's, in Chefer's property as well. Similarly, v'ru'uya ha'isa parshas Nachalos, lichta likasev ayde Moshe. So really, Rabbi Osai, the parsha of Nachalos, the parsha of inheritance, should have been written by Moshe. What does it mean it should have been written by Moshe? Well, it's another way of saying that it should have been a set of halachos. When you look at the parsha of Nachalos in the Torah, so the way the parsha of Nachalos, the way the inheritance laws get conveyed down is how it's a reactionary teaching. Meaning, the daughters of Tzlavchad approach Moshe. Moshe doesn't know what to do with their situation. Moshe in response to their situation, and that creates the opening for the teaching of the laws of inheritance. It wasn't supposed to happen that way. The way it was supposed to happen is Moshe Rabbeinu was going to teach the laws of inheritance in the same way that he taught all of the other halachos of the Torah. So why is it that the teaching of the laws of inheritance comes through Benos Tzlavchad? So Ru'uya is a parshas Nachalos likasev ayde Moshe ela shezochu Benos Tzlavchad. Rather, I will say, Benos Tzlavchad have the incredible merit that the laws of inheritance were taught through them. In other words, that their question ultimately, again, opens the door for the teaching of all of the laws of inheritance. So I will say, just keep this in mind. This is going to be a much longer brisa, but the whole reason we brought this up was because of this particular episode, which is that at the end of the day, Moshe Rabbeinu knew the halacha. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the specific halacha that Benos Tzlavchad were asking him. Benos Tzlavchad were saying, do we inherit our father? And Moshe Rabbeinu knew the answer to that was, yes. What was his shalom? What was his suffix? His suffix was, do they inherit the double portion of their father? Meaning again, Tzlavchad is a bechor, therefore should be entitled to a double portion in Chefer's property. Do the daughters of Tzlavchad ultimately inherit that double portion or not? That was his shayla. And the Gemara says something so beautiful, that really the halachos of Nachalos should have been taught to Klal Yisrael in what we'll call just a regular normative fashion. Moshe Rabbeinu conveying halachos to Klal Yisrael. But at the end of the day, Benos Tzlavchad have the great tzichos, we'll see you understand this great tzichos, that the entire inheritance law is taught as a result of their questions. Meaning, when you look at the flow of the parashios, it is the question of Benos Tzlavchad that ultimately opens the door for the conveyance of all of this incredible halacha. The Gemara goes weiter.
Why would you think that they wouldn't get from Moshe?
Why would they? In other words,
that's his inheritance.
But the notion that a daughter inherits is a chiddush to begin itself, right? Is so. Why would we?
She should get it all. There's no reason.
Where do we know that from? I'm saying, when you say it very authoritatively, it makes sense. But we don't know that. We don't mean this is a new halacha. This is a new halacha. So we just don't know how far the rights of the daughters go. Does the rights of a daughter just allow her to inherit her father, or no? Does she become a full mamali makam of her father? We just don't know, only because it never came up. It never came up. So therefore, again, Vayakri Mishpata. So, meaning, you want to tell him Moshe Rabbeinu could have handled this on his own. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I just have no precedent for this. When I have no precedent for this, I have to go back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm sorry? So hold on. So remember, this is good. The whole reason we're bringing this down is because this is going to be brought as part of a discussion.
That's what you were getting
out
over there.
Yes, but...
Do you guys want to sit next to each other? That'd be helpful. Right, so again, remember, this is going to go back to the Mukhsak discussion. This is where we're going to. Meaning the whole reason this is being brought up is to determine whether or not these Eretz Yisrael is considered to be a Roy or a Mukhsak. But in terms of, isn't it mistaber? The answer is no. And it's not mistaber only because this is the first time a situation like this is coming up. So does Moshe Rabbeinu know that they inherit their father? That he knows. Does he know that they're the full mamalim makom of their father to inherit even his pishnayim? That apparently Moshe Rabbeinu did not feel confident to paskin on his own. So also listen to this. The Gemara goes weiter. The Yodaya Moshe Rabbeinu. Similarly again, Moshe Rabbeinu knew Shama Koshesh B'misa. Let's remember again, there are two times in the Torah where the Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what to do with a particular scenario. The first time is Benos Slavchad. The first time is the daughters of Slavchad. What to do in terms of, now what the Gemara is suggesting is in terms of the Pishnayim. The second time was the Makoshesh. And we're going to talk about the connection between these two episodes. The Makoshesh was the individual who cut trees down on Shabbos. It was Mechal Shabbos Befar Hesia. He violated Shabbos publicly. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not know. The Pasuk says, Vayanichu b'mishmar, kilo parashma ya'aselo. They put it in, I will say, you understand, just as an aside, in the Jewish penal system, there is no such thing as jail. There's no such thing as jail. See, I will say, amazingly enough, so the Ribbono Shel Olam, right, Yiddishkeit realized something that it's taken that legal systems have not yet figured out, which is that jails do not rehabilitate people. That jail, right, putting a criminal in a cell somehow and holding them like a caged animal and then letting them back out into society at some later time does absolutely nothing except sometimes to reinforce negative behaviors. So therefore, again, there's no jail in halacha. There's no jail in halacha. The only thing we do have is a holding cell. There's a holding cell, and the holding cell is to figure out, and under certain circumstances, what to do with someone. So the pasuk says over here, they put the makoshesh in the holding cell, because they didn't know what to do with him. They didn't know what to do with him. So the Gemara says, what do you mean they didn't know what to do with him? Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the makoshesh is going to be put to death. Sheneemar mechalal mosimas, because the Bible says the punishment for chilul Shabbos is execution. Aval lo haya yodeh be'eza miso yamos. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know which form of the arba misos, which form of the four capital punishments was going to be administered. So the Gemara says, v'ruuya haisa parshas mekoshesh shetikasev ayde Moshe. On a technical level, the halachos concerning the mekoshesh should have been conveyed by Moshe Rabbeinu, just as a plain teaching. But rather, again, this particular halacha was taught through the actions of the Mekoshesh. What do we learn from this? This is an incredible yisod. It teaches us that at the end of the day, the Ribbono Shel Olam brings about good things through righteous people and negative things through evil people. What is the Yonavol saying? That the Gemara says the following, that at the end of the day, Bnos Tzlafchad were righteous in their desire to have a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, because of their righteousness, the laws of inheritance were taught through them. The Mekoshesh was a Mechal Shabbos, and therefore, again, because of his Avera, the laws of Chil Shabbos were taught through him. Now, both say, now why do we bring this whole thing down? Now, both say, if you understand, remember what we said before. We're trying to figure out why is it that Benos Tzlafchad would get the double portion of their father, meaning the double portion of Tzlafchad, the double portion that Tzlafchad would have been entitled to in the property of Chayfer, his father. So we said because Eretz Yisrael is muhsakas. Because for Yotzei Mitzrayim, Eretz Yisrael was not roi, rather it was muhsak. So says the Gemara, if you hold that Eretz Yisrael is muchzekes, then my kamestapkale. So maybe this is your point. I mean, the Gemara is asking, Moshe, I understand. If you hold that Eretz Yisrael is muchzekes, if you hold that again, that the Yotzei Mitzrayim literally had possession of Eretz Yisrael, it was theirs, it wasn't Rai, it was muchzak, so then what's Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix? Then why, meaning again, if that's the case, then of course Benos Tzlavchad acquire not only the inheritance of their father Tzlavchad, but should also inherit his double portion in Chayfer's property. To which the Gemara says, but here's the problem. He gufa kamestapli. No. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix. Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix was he didn't know how to treat the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael, legabe Yotzei Mitzrayim. Were the Yotzei Mitzrayim considered to be ra'ui in Eretz Yisrael, or was it muchzak in Eretz Yisrael? What was Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix? This is Gufa Moshe Rabbeinu's Shaila. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix? Because we'll say the pasuk itself is ambiguous. Dichsiv, v'nasati osah lachem morasha, ani Hashem. The pasuk says, I will give to you, we'll say, now morasha is a legacy. I will give to you Eretz as a morasha, I am Hashem. Yerusha hi lachem avosechem. So I will say, how do you understand that phrase? I'm giving to you as a morasha. On one end, you could say, Yerusha lachem avosechem. It's like an inheritance from your forefathers. In other words, that Eretz Yisrael is treated as owned by the Yotzei Mitzrayim. The Yotzei Mitzrayim literally were muchzak in it. And therefore, the children inherited it. And therefore, of course, Benos Tzlavchad should get their father's double portion. Oh, then the other possibility is, Shemorishin ve'inon yarshin. Or maybe the other possibility is that at the end of the day, the Yotzei Mitzrayim, they could bequeath, right? They could bequeath this property, Eretz Yisrael, to their offspring, but they themselves never actually inherited it. In other words, they were never muchzak. They were roi, they had a right, and they bequeathed that right ultimately to their offspring, but they themselves never owned it. If they themselves never owned it, they're what Rabbo say? It's roi, it's not muchzak. If it's right, then it's not muchzak, then what? Then those who inherit, then the Bechor doesn't get pishnayim. Upash delay, odosh, omrisha venosh, upash delay, tarvayu. And at the end of the day, we say that actually it's, but right, we answer both of these things. Yerusha lachem avoseichem, that it will say, we consider Eretz Yisrael a Yerusha from the forefathers, from those who left Egypt, umorishin ve'inon yershin. But ultimately, again, they bequeathed it, but they did not inherit it. Bahinu v'chsiv, and I will say, this is the meaning of the pasuk, tivi'imo v'sita'imo bahar nachalascha. So we'll say, this is by Az Yashu. It's actually a very interesting pasuk. The pasuk says, Tivi Emo. And we'll say, Tivi Emo means, you will bring them, and you will plant them, Bahar Nachaloscha, in the mountain of your portion. Tivi Enu Lo Ne'emar. It doesn't say, you will bring us, Ela Tivi Emo. You will bring them. Melamed Shemisnavin Ve'inon Yodin Masha Misnavin. And we'll say, it's actually very dramatic. It tells us that at the time that Klal Yisrael said Shira, so they said something prophetic without even realizing what they said. They said, you will bring them to the mountain of your inheritance, to the mountain of your portion. Them and not us. Meaning, prophetically, they understood that what? They were not coming to Eretz. And again, they did not realize, the Gemara has this concept often about misnavin or nisnavin ve'in yodimash nisnavin. Sometimes people say things that have prophetic import without realizing the power of their words. Even already at Yam Suf, it was clear they were not going to go in. So at the end of the day, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that this was Gufa, the very suffix of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix, so it's interesting, when you read the Psukim, we often assume that the suffix of Moshe Rabbeinu by Benos Tzlavchad was what? Whether or not a daughter inherits at all. To which the Gemara suggests that was not the suffix of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that in the absence of sons, of course a daughter inherits. So what was his suffix? His suffix was, did the daughters of Tzlavchad inherit the double portion of Tzlavchad, their father, in the estate or in the Eretz Yisrael inheritance of Chefer? And I will say, what is that suffix based on? That suffix is based on how you view the inheritance or the portion of Eretz Yisrael, legabe Yotzei Mitzrayim. Were they considered to be ra'i? Did they just have an entitlement? Or were they muchzak? If they were ra'i, then a bechor would not get pishnayim in his deceased father's portion of Eretz Yisrael. If they were muchzak, then what? then ultimately again, so the Bechor would get Pishnayim in the father's portion of Eretz. And Rabbi said the answer, at least according to this approach of the Gemara seems to be saying is that Yotzei Mitzrayim were considered to be Muchzak in Eretz Yisrael. If you're a Muchzak in Eretz Yisrael, therefore what? Therefore again, Stavchad was entitled to a double portion in Eretz Yisrael from Hefer's portion, and therefore when he dies, the daughters of Tzlafchad not only inherit Tzlafchad's portion of Tzlafchad, but what else do they inherit? Tzlafchad's Pishnayim in Hefer's estate. Now, both say, now you understand, of course, this whole discussion is only according to who? Is only according to whom? According to the opinion who holds that Eretz Yisrael was divided up amongst Yotzei Mitzrayim. Remember, this whole discussion doesn't even get off the ground according to the opinion who holds that Eretz Yisrael was divided up amongst Ba'i Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. Both say, oh, yeah, some really beautiful Gemara. The Gemara says, V'ta'amogla l'fnei Moshe v'lifnei Elazar HaKohen. So both say, so first of all, I'll just point out to you something very interesting. So if you'll notice again, the Braisa pointed out that there are two episodes where Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what to do. Two episodes. Benos Tzlafchad and the Mekoshesh. So now what we're saying is by Benos Tzlafchad, Moshe knew what to do, the Gabi, the daughter's inheritance, he didn't know what to do in terms of the Pishnayim. And the Mekoshesh, he knew the Mekoshesh needed to be put to death, he just didn't know what. What type of death? So we'll say, take a look at Tosfos. I'm just going a little bit out of order here. It's also Tibre Amaska Filo Kitana Shebahen. I want to show you a fascinating juxtaposition between these two episodes of Tzlafchad and the Mekoshesh. You see that last Tosas on the page, Afilu Kitana, skip the Tibre Amaska, Nil Rashba, the Sevala Kimandomer, Tzlafchad Hainu Mekoshesh. Wow. Wow. So says Tosas, same person. Same person. Tzlafchad was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. Tzlafchad was the man who was publicly Mechal Shabbos. Now, what's the pshat? Umaisa Mekoshesh. We'll say, listen, it's going to blow you away. Umaisa Mekoshesh. Haya betchilas arboim miyad achar maisa meraglim. The Mekoshesh happened again in the beginning of the 40-year sojourn, right after the episode with the meraglim. Get ready for this. Dabra memedrish till Hashem shamayim niskavein. That ultimately, again, I will say, the Mekoshesh was Tzlafchad, did what we call an Aveir Lishma. Did an Aveir Lishma. Now, again, he was publicly Mechal Shabbos, L'Shem Shamayim. I know that sounds ridiculous. What does the Rebbe say? This is amazing. She's Dara Medrash, L'Shem Shamayim Niskavim, She'o Omer Misrael, Chayvan She'nigzer Aleim, Shalai Kones La'aretz, M'masem Eraglim, Shuv Ein Mechuyabin B'mitzvos. Because I will say, remember again, after the sin of the spies, after the Chet HaMeraglim, Klal Yisrael was terribly demoralized. And they said, you know what, now that we're going to be stuck here for 40 years, the Torah doesn't apply. Torah, we're going to have to keep mitzvahs. In other words, if we're going to be here in the desert, there's no reason for Torah to apply. We're not chayvim mitzvahs. Amad v'chilal Shabbos. Ultimately, again, what happened? Tzlafchad got up. He publicly violated Shabbos. I will say, for what purpose? Kedei she'hareg v'yiru acherim. We'll leave that. That's next Gemara. So I'll say the Gemara quotes the Medrash and says I'll say something exceptionally dramatic, which is that at the end of the day, the Mekoshesh was Tzlafchad. Why did he publicly violate Shabbos? I'll say he did what's called an Aveir Lishma to show Klal Yisrael that what? That mitzvos, and specifically again, Averos and their punishments, still apply even during the 40-year sojourn in the desert. He made a dramatic display of Messias Nefesh HaKlal Yisrael to show Klal Yisrael ultimately again that Torah, mitzvos, punishments, schar, omesh, still apply even in the desert. Rabbi say, now don't try this at home. In other words, that this concept of Averi Lishma, this concept of Averi Lishma, again, we have this concept by Esther Hamalkov and Averi Lishma, the concept by Mekoshesh. Rabbi say, by the way, it is sounds like a little bit crazy, a little bit far-fetched that somebody would do something like this. But we'll say, I'll tell you something amazing. I'll tell you something amazing, which is if you think about it, the Avir of the Mekoshesh doesn't make sense. Right? So what does the Pasuk say? They somebody was gathering wood on Shabbos. We'll say, why doesn't it make sense? Why doesn't it make sense? Because L'maisa, everything that Klal Yisrael needed in the desert was provided by the Ribono Shel Olam. It doesn't make you see. I understand today if you tell me somebody's a Mechal Shabbos. You know, okay, goes to work, parnasa, this, that. I understand. I can understand the Yitzhahara Because at the end of the day, a person might think erroneously that if I work hard, even on Shabbos, I'll have more parnas, I'll have more money. All right, I understand that Yitzhara. But in the desert, it's a miraculous survival. In the desert, the Moshe is taking care of anything and everything. So what's the pshat? Meaning, what's the tzar to go out and to gather wood? What are you trying to accomplish? Selamai, the Medrash, therefore understands you're right. This was not a utilitarian mitzvah in order to go out and earn more money. This was what's called an Avreda Shot, Tzlafchad made, and I will say again, it was still, it's not the right decision. Meaning, had Tzlafchad asked, should I do this? The answer would have been, unequivocally, resounding, no, don't do this. Tzlafchad didn't consult. Tzlafchad did it on its own. But Lamais, again, it is an Aver Lishma. He did it at the end of the day in order to teach Klal Yisrael that even though we are condemned to a 40-year sentence in the Midbar, the laws of the Torah still apply. I'm just pointing this out because it's fascinating how the Braisa juxtaposes these two cases of Benot Tzlafchad and the Mekoshesh, and Tosfos understands based on the Medrash that it was literally the same person. Incredible Gemara. Let's go back. So again, back to Benot Tzlafchad. So the Pasuk says that Benot Tzlafchad brought their case, brought their question about inheriting their father, and they stood before Moshe and before Elazar HaKohen. V'lefnei HaNesim, v'lefnei Kol HaEda. So I have Shar. So I'll say, the way the Pasuk reads is like this. The way it sounds like is, they brought their case before Moshe, right? Moshe did not know the answer. Then they went to Elazar HaKohen. Elazar didn't know the answer. They went to Lefnei HaNesim. The Nesim didn't know the answer. They went before the Edo. So it doesn't make sense. Efshar. Amdu Lefnei Moshe. V'lo Amru Lehen Davar. V'amru Lefnei HaNesim. V'chol HaEdo. So does it make sense to say that if Moshe didn't know the answer, that's what? And then they would go tell Elazar, and Elazar would have the answer. If Moshe doesn't know the answer, then what? No one knows the answer. So what's the pshat? Elo, Sirius HaMikra V'Dershe Div Rabbi Yosha. And Rabbi Yosha Paskins, Sirius HaMikra means Rabbi Yosha, split up the Pasuk and actually read it in reverse order. That the way, if you look at the Rashbam says, Darsheo, it's a second wide line, Kilomar, Darsheo Ki Ilu Kosov Lemafreya. Read the Pasuk as if it's written in reverse order. V'tamo lifnei Moshe, u'mikamei Moshe amdu lifnei Elazar, u'mikamei Elazar amdu lifnei Anasim, u'mikamei Anasim amdu lifnei Aida, v'haydi lo kasa v'tamo lifnei Aida, v'lifnei Anasim, lifnei Elazar, lifnei Moshe, haynu lefishin erotza lahakdim apasuk tamid l'rav. El Arisha Ushachar, she's supposed to say, the Gemara says something very beautiful. Rabbi Yosha says, you have to read the Pasuk in reverse. In other words, when did they stand before Moshe? Only after they stood before Elazar, and only after they stood before the Nesim, and only after they stood before the Eda. In other words, they first went to the Eda, then to the Nesim, then to Elazar, only then to Moshe. So why don't you write it in chronological order? I mean, why don't you write it in simpler order? Because we'll say it's a covenant out of deference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Pasuk didn't want to put Moshe Rabbeinu's name after all of the other names in the Pesukim. Abachanan Amr Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. We'll say, listen to this. No, you know what happened? Bebeis HaMedrash Hayu Yoshvin. In reality, everyone was sitting in the Beis Hamikdash. Everyone was sitting in the Ohel Moed together. B'no Tzlafchad walk in. V'holchu v'amdu lahen lifnei kulan. So I'll say the second opinion says, no, what happened? In fact, all of them, meaning Moshe, Elazar, the Nesiim, everybody was sitting together. And B'no Tzlafchad walked into the Beis Hamikdash when all of them happened to be together. So the Gemara says, B'maikam eflugi, what are they arguing about? Mar Savar Cholkin Kavod LaTalmid B'Makom HaRav. So we'll say one opinion says that you can go ahead and give honor to the Talmud even when the Rebbe is present. So we'll say that second opinion that says that when they were all sitting together, that's when Benos Slavchad walked in. That opinion holds that you can go ahead and give Kavod to the Talmud even when the Rebbe is present. In other words, it's not considered to be a slight to the covet of the Rebbe to give covet to the Talmud in the presence of the Rebbe. In fact, if anything else, it amplifies the covet to the Rebbe, amplifies the covet to the teacher when you give covet to a student. Because covet to a student, ultimately, again, is covet. Therefore, again, when Benos Slavchad walk in and Moshe, Elazar, the Nesim are all there, there's no slight to the covet of Moshe Rabbeinu to the fact that Benos Slavchad posed this question in everyone's presence. Umar Sav, the other opinion says, oh, so that's answering it. But you could pose the question, Mar Savra in Cholkin. I will say the other opinion says, no, you don't give honor to the Talmud in the presence of the Rebbe. Because again, that's considered to be a slight to the kavod of the Rebbe. In other words, when the Rebbe's present, you should only give kavod to the Rebbe and not to the Talmud. V'hilchasa, we'll say, what's the halacha? Cholkin. The halacha is that we allow one to give kavod to the Talmud, even in the presence of his Rebbe, because we assume, again, that's not a slight to the kavod of the Rebbe, rather, if anything, it's fakir, it's just the opposite, that a Rebbe receives even greater kavod when what? When he sees that others are giving kavod to his own Talmud. V'hilchasa in cholkin. So we'll say, so the halacha is, we don't give kavod to the Talmud in the presence of the Rebbe. So we'll say, obviously, we just contradicting ourselves. Kasha, hilchasa, hilchasa. So which one is it? Hilchasa, hilchasa, lo kasha. Ha de poligli rabbi yikra. Ha de lo poligli rabbi yikra. And we'll say, it depends. If the Rebbe himself gives kavod to his Talmud, then what? Then we assume that ultimately, again, the Rebbe is not makbid if others give kavod to the Talmud in the presence of the Rebbe. But if the Rebbe himself does not give kavod to the Talmud, then ultimately, again, one should be careful about giving kavod to the Talmud in the presence of the Rebbe. So also, I just say something very beautiful. The Chassam Sofer comments on this, and the Chassam Sofer says that we could learn the halacha from this, from the Ribono Shel Olam. The davar zeh yesh lomo miyakadosh baruch hu, shetziva lechabit uliyari miyachachamim v'ashoftim, v'af al gav shemole kola olam kvodo. Mikom makom, cholkin lem kavod, ukimosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu chelo kavod liyireyav, af anu tzvichin lelich bidrachav. So the Chassam Sofer says, that Rebbe said there's a clear answer to this. The Ribono Shel Olam commands us to respect Talmidei Chachamim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us to respect great people, even though what? Even though the Ribono Shel Olam is everywhere and anywhere. So the Ribono Shel Olam is the Rebbe, and yet his Talmidim are there, but yet he commands us to go ahead and give kavod to his Talmidim, even when the Rebbe HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is present. Therefore, again, I will say the halacha is that we go ahead and give kavod to the Talmud, even in the presence of the Rebbe. But again, we accept this distinction. That's when we've seen the Rebbe himself go ahead and give kavod to the Talmud. When the Rebbe himself gives kavod to the Talmud, then ultimately, again, that's the license for us to give kavod to the Talmud as well. So we'll say, therefore, two different narratives over here. Either Bnei Tzlafchad are going through the different orders, right, and going up the chain till they get to Moshe Rabbeinu, or no, they're asking all of them in the presence, in the same, all of them are gathered together, and that's not considered to be a lack of kavod to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because again, Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe of all of them, but Moshe Rabbeinu was also the kind of Rebbe who gave kavod to his own Talmidim. When the Rebbe gives kavod to his Talmidim, then it's permitted for others to give kavod to the Talmud, even in the presence of the Rebbe. And again, ultimately, the Chassam Sofer telling us that we emulate the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribono Shel Olam, the great Rebbe, is everywhere, yet he commands us to give kavod to his Talmidim, and we learn from here, ultimately, again, the permissibility to be holy covered the Talmud, even b'makom rav. Tana, we'll say the Gemara goes weiter. B'no slavchad, chachmani osein, darshani osein, sitkan osein. So this is a very beautiful Gemara. The daughters of slavchad were chachmanios. They were wise, darshanios. They knew how to darshan, sitkan osein. I'm sorry, so we'll say, so again, they were wise, they knew how to darshan, and they were righteous. We'll say first wide line, Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis, Chachmani Yosein. What does it mean they were wise? Shalafisha Dibro. So we'll say, because they knew, they dafka phrased their question at a very specific time. What does this mean? Damra Shmo Bar Yitzchak, Melamid, Shaya Moshe Rabbeinu Yoshev V'Dorish HaParashas Yavmi. We'll say, so interestingly enough, they went ahead, and they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in the Parsha of Yibum. The parasha of Yibum, Shenemar, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachtov. So what happens? So they come to Moshe Rabbeinu. What do they say? Moshe Rabbeinu, you're in the middle of Darshan in the parasha of Yibum. Amrulo, Im Keben Anu Chashuvin, Tina Lanu Nachlo Keben. See, if daughters are like a son, then what? Our father died. Give us inheritance like a son. Im Lav, and if you say daughters are not like a son, then what? Tisyabim Imenu. Then our mother should be subject to Yibum. In other words, if daughters are significant like sons in terms of inheritance, then we should inherit our brother's portion. Our father's portion. If on the other hand, daughters are not significant like sons, then what? Our mother should be subject to Yibum and remarry our mother off. Miyad vayakrev Moshe's mishpatan. Immediately afterwards, Moshe brought their mishpat, brought their case before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Both say, what do you see from here, by the way? You see that what's the definition of chachma? the real definition of wisdom. The definition of wisdom is knowing when to broach certain subjects. See, I will say, sometimes something is an important matter to discuss, but as they say, timing is everything. So to know, first of all, again, when a person is going to be receptive to what it is you have to say, that's chachma. That's chachma. Not only to know how to broach a subject, but to know ultimately when to broach a subject. Therefore, the Gemara says, "B'no slafar ar chachmani osein," they're wise women, because they waited till Moshe was in the subject of Yibum. That's when they brought up this particular discussion. Next, darshani osein. They knew how to darshan. How so? Shahayu omros. Ilu hayelo ben lo dibarnu, because they said ultimately to Moshe Rabbeinu, if our father had a son, we would not even be broaching this subject with you. Vahatanya, vahatanya, bas. So I'm sorry. Ilu hayelo ben lo dibarnu. Vahatanya. Rabbi said, but one second, there's another brayso that says bas. That Bnos Lav Chatzer, Rabbi says, a little strange. Bnos Lav Chatzer, had our father had a daughter, we would not have brought this up with you. So we'll say it doesn't make any sense. The Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Sami Mikan Bas. Rabbi Yirmiyah says that price is corrupted. Ignore that price. Abai Amar Rino says, Afilu Haya Bas Leben Lo Dibarnu. No, what Bnos Lav Chatzer was saying was the fact, Moshe, had our father had a son, even had that son predeceased our father, and that son had left behind a daughter, Abbas HaBen, we would not be bringing up this discussion. In other words, what they were saying is, had there been a son who left offspring, we would have not even petitioned you for the estate of our father. But only now that there is no son, and of course, meaning there's no offspring of a son, we are coming here to claim the inheritance of our father. Tzidkani Hosein, Rabbi said, this is amazing. They were righteous, but this will conclude. Tzidkani Hosein, Shalom Nasu Ela Lahagun Lahen. Rabbi said, Binos Slavchad only married men who were fit for them. Rabbi said, what does this mean? Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, Shalom Nisu El Lahagun Lahen. It's about 6 lines up from the end of the Rashbam, 7 lines up. Ki Da'amram Lekamon, which we're going to learn later on, Binos Slavchad Huchuli Nasi Lechom Mishi Yirtu, Ki Dechsev Latov Beinen. Well, it's like, Binos Slavchad were told. So remember, Moshe Paskins, they inherit. They inherit. So then, Moshe Binos tells them, listen, you can marry anyone you want. You can marry anyone you want. So listen to this. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells him, listen, you have the right to marry whoever you want, but I'm going to give you some advice. What's the advice? What's the advice? Try to marry in your tribe. Try to. You don't have to. You can marry anyone you want. You can't put a cap on who you marry. My advice is, try to marry someone within the tribe. Alma, mishpachas mata avia hakunin hayu va'ashkechan shenisulam kidichsev v'atiyana machla v'noah chaglo milka v'tirza libnei dodehen l'nashim de'af agav dehutru l'to b'neim l'orati d'avik elu be'agunim. So also listen to this. They were tzidkanios. They were tzidkanios because even though they were given the license to go ahead and marry anyone they wanted, they heeded the advice of Moshe Rabbeinu and only married within their tribe. Now, both say the Gemara says something amazing over here. The Gemara says, and therefore again, so also you understand that the definition of righteousness, it's interesting, by the way, you're seeing that, right? What's the definition of tzidkanios? The Gemara defines them as tzidkanios. How? Because they listen to the advice of Moshe Rabbeinu. That sometimes the greatest display of tzidkus is the ability to listen to wisdom and counsel from someone who you understand is greater or wiser than you. Meaning, Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the license, marry whoever you want. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, I have etza for you. They were tzidkanios, they were righteous, and that they heeded the advice of Moshe Rabbeinu. So we'll just do one more line and then we'll stop. Tani, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Tani, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Afilu kitana shebahen, lo nises pechusa me'arba'im shana. The Gemara says, that as a result of heeding the advice of Moshe Rabbeinu, and only marrying within their tribe, so this delayed their getting married. This delayed their getting married. In other words, whatever that means, either because, again, there weren't suitable matches for them of the same age, or because, again, they just did not find the right shidduch, whatever it is. You see, here's what's interesting. Had they just married anyone, right, they could have probably found a match much earlier. But because they chose to heed the advice of Moshe, only marry within the tribe, it limited the pool. As a result, none of them got married younger than the age of 40. So the Gemara says, "Ini, is that true?" Va'amar Rav Chista, he goes to the Gemara, says something very interesting. Niseis pechusim bas estrim yoledes ad shishim. If a woman gets married younger than 20, she has the ability to give birth until 60. Bas Esrim, if she gets married at the age of 20, Yoledes Adar Boim, she gives birth until 40. Basar Boim, if she goes in and gets married at 40 or above, Shuv Eina Yoledes, she doesn't have children. I will say, now we're going to discuss what the Gemara means over here, right? Mm-hmm. What's the idea? For right now, we'll just take it at face value. So Gemara says, I don't understand. We know that the daughters of Tzlafchad, ultimately, again, so now you're telling me they only got married young. They got married above the age of 40. We'll say one thing we do know, which is what? They had children. They had children. So how do you reconcile these two ideas? Elo, mitoch shetzit kanyo sein, naaselohen neis kiyocheved. But I will say, because they were righteous, ultimately, again, the Ribon Shalom performed the miracle for them, the same type of miracle that he performed for Yocheved. I was saying, I'm going to leave you on the cliffhanger, and Yeretz Hashem, we'll continue it tomorrow so beautifully with the neis of Yocheved. Shaykh, we'll stop over here.
Rabotai, please remove all your Gemaras because the room is being...